This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. Crohn's disease is an ugly, nasty illness that is seldom discussed and tends to run in certain families, often Jewish families. Between 500,000 and a million Americans suffer from Crohn's, and in some areas, especially the northern states, the number of cases seems to be growing. Now, the effects of Crohn's are ghastly. A progressive inflammation of the bowel that almost always requires repeated surgeries to remove the damaged gut until there's nothing left. The causes of the disease are obscure, but in recent years, two sets of new treatments seem to be having remarkable effects and making life better for Crohn's sufferers. Yet as these treatment strategies claim more attention, a bitter disagreement has broken out between two medical camps. As Frank Browning reports, the rancor exposes some old and troubling issues in the practice of medicine.
I'm Tracy Rook.
I'm Will Rook.
We both have Crohn's disease.
Tracy and her son, Will, who's 14, live in a village in the mountains of southern Wales. Tracy was diagnosed with Crohn's at age 18.
I had surgery, which has removed most of my bowel. I've got 125 centimetres of bowel left now, and I can't afford to lose any more.
Will began to get sick 4 years ago.
He's like a little sloth. All he wanted to do was sleep, and when he wasn't sleeping, he was either had a ravenous appetite because of the steroids. He was either sleeping, eating, or on the toilet, which was it's not very nice to see, especially as I thought, oh, God, that's a gene that I've passed on. It's my fault. It was pretty horrendous.
As a little boy, Will had watched his mother's endless trips to the surgeon. After he was diagnosed with Crohn's, he decided he wasn't willing to undergo the same suffering. Instead, he turned to the Internet, where he discovered a new and highly controversial approach to Crohn's treatment, one that doesn't involve either surgery or the standard anti-inflammatory steroids that kept his body puffed up like a melon. The key proponent of the new strategy is, in fact, a surgeon who has operated on Crohn's patients for more than a quarter century, John Herman Taylor, Chief of Surgery at St. George's Medical School at the University of London.
Here's Hannah, for example, in the 12th of December 1996. And here she is about, you know, an inch and a half higher in October 97.
John Herman Taylor points to a set of marks on the wall in his South London office. The marks show the growth pattern of stunted adolescent Crohn's patients before and after he treated them.
Here's Will, for example, and here he is in March 2001. And here he is in July 2001. And previously, having been stuck on this figure, he's just shot up what I call like a seedling lettuce in a greenhouse. And that is what killing MAP can do for people with growth-arrested juvenile Crohn's disease.
The key word here is MAP, short for Mycobacterium avium paratuberculosis, a sort of cousin of conventional TB. For nearly a century, doctors have suspected MAP as a cause of Crohn's disease because the bug creates very similar gut inflammation in cows and sheep. But despite decades of lab work, it seemed all but impossible to find MAP in most Crohn's patients. When you look at ordinary TB through a microscope, you can see the actual particles of the bacteria that attack the body. But it doesn't work that way with MAP, Herman Taylor acknowledges.
With MAP? If you look down the microscope in somebody with Crohn's disease, unless you use very special techniques, you can't see it at all.
The reasons have to do with the nature of MAP's cell structure, he says, as well as the bacteria's very slow growth pattern inside the wall of the intestine. More important, he says, is that MAP doesn't directly challenge the immune system. Instead, it seems to upset how the immune system is regulated, how it turns itself on and off inside the gut.
You can think of an immune system like a very complex railway network, for example, which is controlled by signal box cells. Well, if you lose this analogy, MAP sits in the signal box cells, and it can just sit there and lean against the walls and not do anything at all. Or it can start pulling the wrong levers. And if this happens, the mucosa of the gut becomes leaky, and the actual inflammation in through the gut wall in Crohn's disease is caused not primarily by the MAP bug itself, but by the leakage into the gut wall of stuff like food residues and bacteria. And that one-to-two way in which the disease is caused is something which makes everything else in the understanding of this disease drop into place.
Assuming, of course, that it really is the MAP bug that's provoking the immune system to turn itself against the body.
I'm not convinced, going over the data, that anybody has actually ever seen an antibody response.
That's Warren Strober of the National Institutes of Health in Washington. He's one of the nation's most senior Crohn's researchers. Strober doesn't believe the body's immune system reacts to the bug at all. He believes Crohn's is simply a genetic malfunction of the immune system.
If they're saying that it's affecting the regulation of the immune response, then they would have to show that somehow it's causing changes in the production of certain kinds of regulatory cytokines. This has not been done because, in fact, they don't find any response to these organisms. And there is, in fact, a question, a real question, of whether the organisms actually exist in the patients.
Not true, says John Herman Taylor.
We published our results on this in 1992, which showed that about two-thirds of people with Crohn's disease, we could find the MAP bug in them. And what happened then is what always happens after something like this, and it's a perfectly proper thing, is that many, many other laboratories tried to do the test, and out of the 18 fully refereed scientific publications in this, 9 said, yes, it's there, some or most of the time, and 9 said, no, it's not there or hardly ever.
More sensitive DNA tests available now, he says, show the presence of MAP in more than 90% of his patients. At the University of Central Florida, gastroenterologist Ira Shaffrin has also been looking for evidence of MAP, not only on the inner surface of the gut, but also in the interior of the intestinal wall.
We have found DNA signals in 86% of specimens.
When the same technique was applied to non-Crohn's patients, none turned up positive, which gets back to the trouble that many labs had confirming Herman Taylor's results in England. It all depends on which antibody test a lab uses and how sensitive the DNA markers are that it's looking for. The most common antibody test, called the ELISA, showed MAP presence in only about a third of the patients. But Shaffrin says when he used a more sensitive antibody test called the Western blot, he, like Herman Taylor, found MAP in over 90% of his patients.
I'm willing to concede that the organism exists within the tissues.
The NIH's Warren Strober.
I think there would be a big question about how many patients are actually affected, where the organism exists, and most importantly, what is the organism doing?
Even if Herman Taylor, Shaffrin, and others are correct that MAP almost always shows up in Crohn's patients, that still doesn't prove it causes Crohn's, Strober says. Correct, the challengers admit, but it's very suggestive, since MAP does cause a very similar gut inflammation called Yoni's disease in cattle. More to the point, say both Herman Taylor and Shaffrin, a cocktail of antibiotics like those used on young Will Rook in Wales does seem to bring almost immediate relief. Well into his second year of antibiotic treatment, Will appears to be flourishing. Even so, the pediatrician who treats him and her advisors warn Will's mother against following John Herman Taylor's treatments.
Both of them didn't believe in what the professor was saying and what his beliefs were. Just said that he was a quack and that he came up with different theories every year, which is so untrue because the professor only has this one theory about the paratuberculosis disease. All the time we were under those people, those doctors, all the time Will was under those doctors, we were there every other week. We were going to the hospital every other week just for checkups and blood tests and what have you. Now we're under the professor. We see him once every 6 months.
At his clinic near Orlando, Florida, Ira Shaffrin says he's also had very promising results with the antibiotic cocktail.
We've employed two antibiotics, rifabutin and clarithromycin, and found that those two antibiotics happened to be the best in combination for killing this bacteria. And now our first 36 patients have shown an 80% response rate at the end of 2 years.
Or healing of the Crohn's inflammation in the gut. For his part, Strober's team at the NIH has also successfully treated patients by giving them a very powerful drug called TNF, or tumor necrosis factor, which actually suppresses the immune system, thereby stopping the gut inflammation. Yet while TNF has been effective, suppression of the immune system can also leave patients susceptible to other infections, including actual tuberculosis. Paul Ewald, who heads the evolutionary medicine program at the University of Louisville, believes the rancor between these two camps is counterproductive. Treating the immune system directly, Ewald says, has helped Crohn's patients, but it doesn't deal with underlying causes.
So whenever you have an immune disease, such as Crohn's disease or any autoimmune disease, we really have to look further to ask what's triggering the problem. And for those immune diseases that have been figured out, we end up, in all cases, finding some infectious agent that is the original trigger. So I think these two camps are sometimes arguing with each other, but they really shouldn't be. I think they should be looking at the possibility that both of these processes are really two sides of the same coin.
All of which might sound like academic banter for a senior medical school seminar, except that incidence of Crohn's disease seems to be rising. One important study conducted in Minnesota found Crohn's cases rose by 46% between 1980 and 1991. Others show a slower rise, but an expansion into ethnic groups that had seldom suffered Crohn's before, namely blacks and Asians. The question is why. Very recent research seems to show that many Crohn's patients, perhaps most, do have a genetic mutation. That mutation could lead directly to Crohn's. Or, as Shaffrin and Herman Taylor believe, it may indicate why when MAP is everywhere, it only shows up in susceptible Crohn's patients. And finally, it may have something to do with modern industrial agriculture. The intense concentration of the milk and meat industries may be distributing MAP more widely in the food we eat, thereby enabling it to find those of us who are susceptible to the bug. Last winter, after MAP was found in 1.5% of Britain's supermarket milk supplies, government public health officials there ordered milk to be pasteurized an additional 20 seconds to kill MAP and other pathogens. Given all that, why do we find such dismissive attitudes by one set of doctors toward another? It's an old, old story, says Paul Ewald.
Almost every decade, people have been very dismissive of infectious causes of disease. And then a few decades later, then people look back at the last 20 or 30 years and they say, oh, well, of course, that disease was caused by infection. Now we're saying this about peptic ulcers, for example, or adult T-cell leukemia, cervical cancer, liver cancer, some stomach cancers. People are saying, well, of course, those are caused by infection. But Crohn's disease, we're very skeptical of this.
What's going on here, Ewald says, is an old-fashioned power struggle, as one paradigm is being challenged by another. Since both treatments have produced relief for Crohn's patients, it's not clear which one will prove to be the most effective. The immune-suppressing drugs, which can have damning side effects and cost thousands of dollars per injection, or the antibacterials, which could produce drug resistance and an even more intractable form of Crohn's, which leaves many patients in a quandary. Back in Wales, Will and Tracy Rook continue to evaluate their options. Since her last surgery, Tracy remains in remission, though Crohn's can recur at any time. And Will, who swears he'll never allow anyone to cut him open, has become something of an internet addict, tracking research advances through a website called Teams with Crohn's.
If he hadn't have sat down one night and found this information, he would have had surgery by now, and I don't suppose that would have cured him of his Crohn's.
Paul Ewald believes that the only reasonable approach is to launch a government-funded clinical trial of the various treatments now available. But so far, only the Australians have undertaken such research. Meanwhile, 25,000 additional Americans and a like number of Europeans are expected to come down with Crohn's disease this year. For NPR News, I'm Frank Browning.